Hello and welcome to 20 Tim Minutes, a podcast that focuses on mental health in a serious but yet humorous way. Listen as I interview a wide variety of guests where we show our support as well as sharing our own personal struggles and stories with mental health. I am your host, Tim McCarthy, and now it's time to talk about it. Hey, what's going on, everybody? You're tuning in to another episode of 20 Tim Minutes. I am your host, Tim McCarthy. Today, we have on a yoga therapist, health coach, and former D1 collegiate athlete who is dedicated to helping people unlock their deeper layers in vitality and strength so you can perform at your best years to come. Amy Huffman, how are you?
Hello, I'm fantastic. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. I'm so glad that you got to come on.
Me too. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
So I always start with this. What does mental health mean to you?
Mental health to me equates to mental fitness. I think that it's dynamic, it's ever changing, and how we care for our mental health can be equated to how we care for our bodies and our physical fitness. I think it's a total system, holistic process, and mental health conditions don't just impact the mind. They impact the mind, they impact our emotions, they impact our behaviors, how we take care of our bodies, our relationships. So to improve mental health really does require like the act of increasing the fitness of the mind through this like whole bodily system, and one that yoga and mindfulness address so very well as a holistic technology, if you will.
Would you consider the brain a muscle?
Yeah, I would.
It's a very important muscle in the body.
Yeah, it is. And so is, you know, like intuition and wisdom. And I think that those kind of get layered underneath within the brain category. We forget that, yes, the brain is an important muscle and part of the operating system. But for me, and the approach and why I love yoga and mindfulness so much is that it reminds us to also listen to our body, and that intuition and wisdom live within the body. And so much of the input that our brain operates off of comes from the body. And it's really about like strengthening that highway of communication, like opening the dialogue between the two. And I think, you know, the paradox of opening that connecting highway to the body allows us to increase our mental health and mental fitness.
Love it. We're going to dive into yoga and the holistic in a little bit, but what is your relationship with mental health?
Yeah. So my relationship, it's varied over the years. You know, how I take care of my mental health has changed and shifted. For me personally, talk therapy wasn't enough. I was used to being really physical in my body as an athlete and like using my body as a tool. And so when it came to first experiencing anxiety and panic attacks and really thinking about, what is the status of my mental health? And I went to therapy for the first time. I wasn't so used to being in my head and like talking about the things and the feelings. I was just used to kind of being in my body. And so when I found yoga and then later yoga therapy, that to me was like a light bulb moment. I can work through emotions and feelings and stickiness and mental health issues using more of like a bottom up approach. And what I mean by that is like working with the body and the breath rather than trying to like think yourself or talk yourself into better mental health. And that really, really resonated with me and is something I think a lot of people do resonate with. And so that's why I chose this path. And that's why I chose to work with high performers and people who are in really stressful, fast-paced, dynamic roles and who kind of forget that mental health can be addressed through the body. So my personal experience allowed me, I think, to approach mental health as such. But I think, you know, the relationship is one that I think has to be continuously nurtured, not just through the mind. It's not a mind practice. It's not mind health. It's total body health that impacts the mental health. So it's my relationship with it. When I take care of my body, I know my mental health improves.
Perfect. When you were dealing with your mental health issues, was it something that just came up like just randomly? Because that happens to a lot of people. Was there like a certain thing that like kind of sprung up that like the issues that you were having that you had to go to talk therapy?
It was really random. It was, you know, got my first panic attack, didn't know what was happening, didn't know why my body was feeling numb, why I couldn't breathe, ended up in the ER, you know, blood pressure is in stroke range. And it was like this, oh my God, what is this inexplicable thing happening within me? And I wasn't aware that I was under a lot of press and stress and anxiety. And looking back, you know, I was being a collegiate athlete and needing to show up and perform constantly and push my body and my mind to the extreme. And it was really my body's way of like raising the alarm. So for me, it came up as a really intense bodily experience. But at the time, there wasn't like a direct correlation. And that continued. And I still have panic attacks today, but my relationship with them has changed. And it's usually a cue for me to take a step back and say like, huh, okay, global perspective, what's happening in my life right now that my body might be responding to? And how can I be a little more mindful with either like how I'm living my life, what I'm eating, how I'm talking to myself, so that that sense of holistic care. But it was really, really random.
What did you play in college?
Volleyball.
Ooh, what number were you?
13. Lucky 13, baby.
I have a 13 tattoo. I love the number 13.
No so kidding.
I'm pretty much a fan of you. I got the tattoo because of your playing career. Were you what were you, an outside hitter? What were you?
Yeah, I was right side. So I played all the way around. And so I'm 5'11", but I played in the Big Ten. And in the Big Ten, I was considered like pretty short. You know, you're sitting up at the net across from like these 6'3", 6'4", like Midwestern gals, and it was intimidating, but it was a lot of fun.
I can only imagine. That's pretty cool though, like playing D1. Like, not many people can say that. Like, how proud are you of that?
I'm pretty proud. I mean, at the time it was intense, and I had a lot of thoughts of like, why the hell are you doing this? But no regrets. I mean, I think along with just like the mental grit and toughness that it taught me, And my ability to like be with hard things and do hard things like physically and mentally is a life skill that I will forever be grateful for.
Let's talk about you being a health coach. Well, what do you do for people exactly?
So I'm a yoga therapist and a health coach. So I work with people one-on-one in a therapeutic capacity. So I'm offering them guidance with conscious eating and whether it be weight management. Yoga therapy comes into play working with people who also have anxiety and stress and who are experiencing pain or discomfort on the physical, mental, emotional level. Yeah.
Do you ever experience any issues being a health coach, like any struggles or any obstacles?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that when you're working with people in that capacity, you're providing a space for people to be really open and honest and vulnerable, and the layers start to peel back. And sometimes you recognize that like, this is beyond my scope and someone else needs to get involved here. Whether it be like a psychologist or a psychiatrist. But I think that it's rather fulfilling because having the dual certification of like yoga therapist and health coach, I'm so much more versed and capable to help people across all realms of the body. So like yoga therapy approaches human anatomy from a 5-layered approach. You know, it's not just physical and mental. It's also the mind and intuition and a bliss body. And so I think it's rather unique that I can go in different angles with people depending on how they're showing up, whether it be, you know, they are experiencing insomnia, or, you know, they have a bipolar diagnosis, or they are, you know, or they're just like in chronic pain from years of being hard on their body, or they have chronic illness. So it's just so broad, which sometimes can be a little overwhelming of like where to start. But where when you really sit with people and allow them to take the floor, which I think is such a beautiful part of alternative and holistic medicine, it's really patient person-centered, you know, you're just able to connect with people in a really beautiful human realm. And it just allows, I think, for people to go deeper into their own healing and really take control and power of their health.
Great segues for me. This is going to be a lot easier. You already kind of said it, but like, I was going to ask, what type of people do you help? So it's like a broad, like you handle a lot of different people. That must be stressful.
You know, it is really broad. It's very adaptable. I've found over the years that I gravitate mostly and then gravitate towards me just from my background experience, high performers, athletes, competitors, entrepreneurs. That said, you know, I do work with people from all walks of life, but that's been my niche a little more in the last few years, just because I do have that experience being in that that high performing type of environment and being able to like speak the language to connect with people, and then be able to give them really applicable practices that are going to move the needle for them. And I think that you know, there's truth in I can teach it because I've done it type of thing.
Why did you want to help people? Is there like a certain instance that happened? You're like, this is my calling. Like, what happened exactly?
My earliest memory is being like 4 years old, and I grew up in a really rural part of Texas. And I don't know. I can remember my neighbor coming over, and she was really sad and upset, and she wanted to be healthier, and she wasn't feeling good. And I was just like, I'll coach you. Let's go walk around the block. And there was just something from very early on of me wanting to just help people feel good in their bodies. And I can't really say exactly where it came from, but I think my own experience, you know, luck or whatever you might have it, I just always felt really connected with myself. And especially as I got deeper into being an athlete, and just saw the value of like self-care so I could perform at the highest level. And there was just something about that experience and connection with self that I felt like, God, I really have to share this with people. And I saw so many people around me, athletes and high performers, just not doing that and putting a lot of stress on their bodies. And not to say that I wasn't there at some point in some phase of my career. But there's just something so fulfilling about helping someone really tap into their own innate power. And it just kind of been my calling since I was little.
Must be a good feeling though to help people.
It is. It's really priceless. I mean, I'm sure you can relate. You know, you help people in a capacity, a very important capacity. And it's just that satisfaction. And yeah, it's a little selfish because, you know, you just help them feel better. You help them get a solution and an answer. But I think, you know, for people who are more empathetic, there's just that, I think it's human nature too, our purpose to really want to help others and be altruistic in that way. And it's a pretty powerful feeling.
Now, you might not feel this way about helping people. Sometimes I get imposter syndrome. Do you ever like feel like you have imposter syndrome? And if you do, how do you deal with it?
Oh, 100%.
I need to
know. All the time. Who doesn't, right? Yeah. Like, that's also human nature. How do I deal with it? I think I take a step back and just kind of like give my ego a little pat on the back or a little hug and be like, it's okay. You don't have to know everything. Just step aside. And, you know, what is it? The 10% rule? Like, you don't have to know all of the things. If you just know maybe 10% more of whoever you're trying to help, then there's a lot of wisdom and benefit to it. And so I think that's really helpful for me too, is remembering like, it's not about me. It's about the other person that I'm trying to help, or the other person on the line, or the person I'm sitting with and holding space for. You know, if you can just meet people where they're at, and oftentimes like offering the space to be heard, people will come to their own conclusions and know the path forward to their own healing. And that's what I love about alternative and holistic styles of therapy, is that it really is person-centered, and you know, you're opening the door for them to really like become their most powerful selves. And oftentimes people just need to know that they have a guide to walk through the door with them.
That's why I like doing these interviews, because I get to learn. So like, that's my 10%. And I like, cause I ask questions, like I feel like other people would want to ask. So I like learning these things. So like people like you that get to come on and like, you, like, thanks for taking the time to speak with me. This has already been very learned a lot already. You already killed it with the segue for me again. This is great. Okay, I hear this word a lot, and I hear the term woo-woo sometimes with it, but what does holistic mean?
Whole body, whole person.
Okay. Yeah. Why is it woo-woo? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know. I think people maybe associate it with woo-woo in the sense that they think there's a spiritual component that doesn't feel authentic. I think that the way that holistic is used in health and beauty and wellness culture just starts to feel a little authentic and phony, in the sense of like, if you take this holistic approach, all your problems will go away and you'll be healthy and beautiful. And like, that's not how I approach it. You know, holistic meaning whole, meaning healing. If you look at the etymology of the word holistic, it comes back into healing. And so you were looking at the whole person as a way to heal and become their fullest, wholest self. And that's really the approach of yoga, is that inherently we are all whole. We develop layers and patternings that can dim our light. But ultimately, if we work on a whole person, whole layered approach, then we allow that light to grow bigger and to shine into some of those dark spaces that naturally get dimmed by this thing called life.
Do you have any examples of like practices with that?
Like specifically to tap into a piece of wholeness?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. There's several meditations that really go through this five-layered approach that I mentioned earlier. It's called the five sheaths or five layers. And so you start out connecting with your physical body, the most tangible, gross layer you can feel and see and touch. And then you move into the breath, which is more energetic and it's a little more subtle. And then you move into the mind. And this is where we have our thoughts and we process and digest our experiences. And then once we digest our experiences, then they become wisdom and insight that we can use in our lives. And then finally, you tap into that bliss body, and not bliss in the sense of like it requires an external factor to feel like joyful and jovial. It's more like bliss as a sense of like deep contentment and peace with the way things are without needing anything. Kind of like when you step outside and like you watch a beautiful sunrise, or you just like feel the breeze on your face, and there's just like a uncomplicated sense of like, ah. And so guiding people through those layers, you will often find where you can start to work within, like which is the layer that has the imbalance, and you can start there. And that usually brings in that sense of wholeness and fullness. But it is bringing awareness to all of those five different layers, because we aren't just flesh and bones. We go deeper than that.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in our bodies that we can't even explain. But when stuff like that, it really helps. Is meditation a big part of that?
100%. Yeah, meditation's at the heart of that. And so I think when people think yoga and yoga therapy, immediately it's like, well, asana and moving my body and doing downward dogs and sun salutations. Yes, that is absolutely part of it. But that's a precursor so you can land into meditation and be in stillness without feeling like you're going to crawl out of your body. And so we do that to move energy and connect with the physical body. So then you can get into the mind and the wisdom and the bliss. So, you know, meditative practices, I would say, are some of the most, if the not most powerful aspect of mindfulness and yoga therapy as a technique and healing modality for people to feel whole, to remember that they are whole.
Now, this might be a tough question, because meditation is tough for me having ADHD. Like, how do you know that you're meditating? Because sometimes I'll just sit there and my mind's racing. And I feel like meditation to me is like, you don't really think about anything. You just relax. Like, why does it seem so hard? And like, how does it supposed to feel?
I think we get wrapped up in just that. Like, it's supposed to feel a certain way, or we need to know how it's supposed to feel, or we're doing it right. And to that, I say, like, there's no right or wrong. There's just practicing it. And the goal of meditation is not to be calm. It's not to be relaxed. It's not to stop your thoughts. That's impossible. It's to be able to drop into this witness perspective where you can almost watch your thoughts play on the screen of your mind without like going down the rabbit hole of one, or without getting like caught up in one, and being able to take a step back and say like, huh, okay, I'm thinking about this same thing over and over, like mental note, maybe I should look into that. And so, yeah, I think that that's one of the biggest misconceptions that, and why I love working with people one-on-one in meditation, is because it's really not about needing to calm thoughts or to change your reality in any way. You're not trying to change anything. You're just becoming more aware of what is already happening and experiencing things more clearly. And if that means that you are distracted all over the place, then that's the point. And you recognize you're in that space. And then what do you do with that information? So then you're able to, you know, move into the next phase of your day with a little more insight and awareness. Meditation can be so many different things, but I think at its core, it really is just becoming more connected with experience and reality in the present moment as it is, without needing to like change it or make it perfect or do it right. And when we can embody that philosophy, then our lives start to feel a little more easeful and less stressful and less dramatic, because we're not like finding this friction all the time. You just learn to practice to be soft and to drop into it with things exactly the way that they are. And when you can practice that, you kind of realize like, huh, maybe there's not a problem to solve right now.
I'm going to have to try that. Yeah.
We'll do a session.
Yes. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. I'm a misconception type of guy. I always hear stuff and then I don't do any fact checking. That's why these interviews are great. So We've been talking about yoga off and on a little bit. And I heard you say this, there's yoga therapy and regular yoga. What is the difference? Because you're a yoga therapist and not a yoga teacher, right?
Correct. So yoga therapy requires, 1,000 hours of additional training where you are really becoming skilled as a practitioner to work with people one-on-one. Yoga instructor is just a different realm of understanding, and you're working with people in a class group setting. And it's just not cut out to be able to give people what they need in a very specific way. So the same way that you go to psychotherapy or you go to physical therapy, you go to a yoga therapist because you have a particular goal in mind or an ailment or a disease. And so it is a one-on-one where we have an intake, do a breath assessment, a posture assessment. What are your goals? What are your concerns? What symptoms are present in your life right now? And then I help you curate a practice based on the exact meditation techniques, if that's where we decide is best, or the exact movements, whether it's sun salutations or down dogs paired with breath, to be able to shift the system and address, which of those five layers there seems to be the most like stickiness and imbalance within, so that we can start to feel into the wholeness and the healing of the body. So it is very much individualized and personalized. And it's really this beautiful mishmash of talk therapy and physical therapy and life coaching all in one, because you're drawing upon the wisdom and philosophy of yoga, which has been around for more than 5,000 years and stood the test of time. Breathing techniques, energetic practices, physical practices, and meditation. So it's just like, it's not a panacea and the end all be all. And there's a lot of value in continuing to do things like talk therapy and physical therapy. But it just provides, I think, people more pathways in that don't feel maybe so intimidating in the way that sometimes talk therapy can feel. At least that was my personal experience.
See, I love yoga. It makes me feel a little bit taller. And it's a great workout because I lost weight from doing it. I feel like everyone should be able to hold up their own weight. And I feel like that's like a great workout to do, is just like doing your own body weight. But what are your thoughts on like the other types of yoga, like hot yoga? Like, is that like, what's the best yoga? Yo yoga?
Well, it depends. It depends on the person. It depends, like, what's your goal? Like, do you just want to move your body and maybe get a little sweat in? Sure, hot yoga. It's better than no yoga most of the time. But if you have something really specific going on, whether it be a mental health condition, whether it be a physical injury, then you can do harm to the system by just walking into your average old yoga class. And so if someone is wondering how yoga might be beneficial for a specific reason and goal, then I highly recommend seeking out a yoga therapist. There's no one best kind. It's so broad and adaptable, but being able to work with the trained professional who can help you find the right style is really important, so that you are not doing further damage to the system. And, in my opinion, I'll go back a little bit on what I said earlier. I don't really think anyone needs to be going into a hot room and stimulating their system more than it already is, right. Like, we're already stimulated as shit, and we don't need to be like turning up the heat and moving our bodies and activating our nervous system any more than it already is. We need to learn to like get on our backs and put our feet up and take deep breaths. That's just my opinion, what I've seen in my practice.
It's like
and working with individuals.
It's like people that wear like trash bags when they're running. It's like, just wear a sweatshirt. I think that would be enough.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be so extreme.
Yeah, like just, it's all basic. It's like crawl before you can walk and walk before you can run. Yoga is so good for mental health. It is like the mind, body, and soul. Obviously, you agree with that. Like the triangle of staying healthy and making sure you're taking care of yourself. You're a very busy person, and hustle culture is real. And how do you deal with it, and how do you beat it?
For me personally, I experienced hustle culture and tried to match it when I was before I started my business full time, and I was working in a startup. And it just kind of felt like I was on this hamster wheel that I couldn't get off of, and someone was turning the wheel and it wasn't me, and I just went off the ride. I think that it's really easy for people to just feed into like the frenetic energy of like doing, which is hustle culture. It's like just moving from one thing to the next and not giving yourself time to like integrate your experiences or to rest or to enjoy life. And it just perpetuates this cycle of like busyness and doing. And, you know, in the spirit of like feeling like balanced individuals, and I think most people want to feel balanced and a little more grounded and a little more calm and be able to regulate their emotions a little more so. But how do you practice balance? And specifically, how do you balance out activity and doing and going and moving? You have to practice being and resting and stillness and pausing. And so, you know, my approach to hustle culture, when I work with clients who are clearly in that hustle culture, because it's so prevalent, is to meet them where they're at. So we might move the body a lot and do some pretty physically intense practices, because that's where their system is at. It's very activated. So you have to meet that energy where it is. And then you're able to bring in some practices that are more gentle and subtle. And you can slowly start to actually change your nervous system, and in doing so, change your mind and create new pathways, new neural pathways of being able to drop into being without anxiety or without such chatteriness or feeling like you're going to crawl out of your skin. I think the hustle culture is just so detrimental to our being, because it doesn't give us an opportunity to rest and acknowledge all the good that's happening in our lives and our capacity to heal holistically. And so when we get into that hustle culture, and things start to break down, and we start to feel unwell, typically, you know, we want a quick fix so we can continue to ride the hamster wheel, when really our body is asking for just like a rest and a break. And that's what I really love helping people do, is to like relax and chill. And at the same time, you got to meet people where they're at.
Right. Now, we're not perfect humans. Like, we still get down in the dumps. Sometimes we still have anxiety. Mm-hmm. We deal with all that stuff. How do you, how would you help other people combat when you're feeling down or unmotivated? Cause like, I'm very unmotivated right now and I'm trying to get motivated. Like, so what would you say or help me do that would help me get motivated?
Yeah. Well, first I would guide you into dropping into your body. Like, what does unmotivated feel like for you in your body? Is it heaviness? Is it a feeling of just like lethargy or apathy? Do you feel it in a particular region of your body? How does your breath feel when you're feeling unmotivated? Is it slow and long, or is it shallow? So bringing a little more awareness to bodily cues and sensations, and then from there, beginning to work with how unmotivation or apathy or depression or anxiety is showing up in a physical capacity, if that makes sense.
Right.
And then beginning to give maybe a breathing practice that is a little more uplifting if you're experiencing depression and collapsing, or a practice that perhaps is a little more fiery and energetic in a balanced way if you are feeling that unmotivation, that sense of like not wanting to do anything. And then, you know, you go deeper into that wisdom layer of like, well, where do you think unmotivation comes from? And if unmotivation could talk, what would it say to you? And I'm not so concerned with the story. It's more so like what comes up in the present that we can work with. Because that's when you really start to get into the juicy stuff of like shifting the actual mental patternings in your relationship with the depression or the anxiety or the mental health diagnosis, you know, the pathology that we're all getting, like you're this, you're that. And so that's kind of the layered approach of like, start with the physical, then maybe breathing. And then you get into like, well, what is that pattern? What is that mind talk? And what if you just change the narrative, you know, a little this way or a little that way? Sometimes that includes meditation. Sometimes that includes journaling. It's really personalized approach.
We breathe every day, and that seems like where to start, because sometimes I'll forget to breathe for the longest time, and then I'm just like, and I just feel like I can feel it. So like, to answer some of those questions, I feel it in like my shoulder blades and my torso. I feel like it's weighing mm-hmm. me down. I feel like it's very negative in my mind, where it's like, I people with bipolar like to pile things on, and I pile things on when I'm down. So like, if I'm unmotivated, I'm like, oh, you're a piece of shit. You're eating like shit. No one likes you, like all that type of stuff. So I know how to feel that. And like, I need to work on my breathing. I know that, like, drink water, do yoga, go for a walk, breathe, just breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting too, that, you know, you do notice and you are aware of where motivation lives within your body. So then the next thing would be like, okay, well, what's the opposite of unmotivation, or what's the opposite of the heaviness that you're experiencing? And it's like, okay, well, is that lightness, or is it, what is it?
Right. It's definitely lightness. And like, when I feel like I can move, like I feel like I'm very clunky right now. Like if I did stretch, it wouldn't go away. If that makes any mm-hmm. sense. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like I'm trying to get out of it. Like I'll do pushups or something. And I'm like, I just keep moving it. And I just need to do more yoga, I think.
Yeah. Cause then it's like, we can work with that and say like, okay, well, if it's lightness, or if you're feeling it in this part of your body, then how about we, work with poses and shapes that are going to bring the qualities of the opposite in, if that makes sense. You can use with imagery too. So for me, anxiety sits right on my chest and feels almost like someone's has their hands on you know, my neck.
A tight turtleneck. And
a tight, tight turtleneck. Yeah. And so when I was working with my own yoga therapist, it was like, well, is there an image to you that represents lightness? And so it was an image of a cloud, like a light, fluffy cloud. So then I started to imagine and bring a somatic experience of the representation of imagery and visuals into this part of my body. And that's how I started to work with the sensations and the physical manifestations of anxiety in that way. And that was really, really powerful for me to be able to remind myself anytime now that I feel heaviness or tightness, I think about the imagery and the orientation of a cloud and like, what does the qualities of that feel like? And most of the time I can feel just like a natural softening, a natural dissolving. So little cues like that, that really invite in the opposite of what you're trying to feel in your being, can be really, really powerful without needing to dive into a story of where it came from, or without needing to muscle through it, or without even needing to like sit through a crazy long meditation or go off to a retreat somewhere in the mountains. It can be really, really subtle. The subtle practices are the powerful ones.
Awesome. Now, I already know the answer to this, so I'm going to move on. So besides signing up one-on-ones with you, I was going to ask, what are the best steps to take to turn your life around for the better? I think everyone listening right now knows that answer. So I'm going to shift over to this. Why should people book with you?
Because I hold space and we can work towards being your most powerful, dynamic, connected self. I think a lot of us are really, really hungry for a connection and for spiritual connection and for deep purpose in our lives. And, you know, I pride myself in being able to guide people into that.
Now, this one's going to be interesting because what you do is very self-care. Like you're taking care of yourself with what you do and what you're giving out. But do you have any other self-care, like what you do, like to make sure like you're taking care of yourself? Like what does self-care look like for you?
Starting every morning with quiet time. Like before I even start doing the thing, I like to have slow mornings if I can. Sure, I'm not perfect. It doesn't happen every single day. But 90% of the time, it's like pausing, whether it's 5 minutes of journaling or it's 5 minutes of breathing. I practice being before I practice doing, because once you start getting going doing in your day, it doesn't stop. And I noticed that when I don't take just those 5 minutes to like approach my day from a more intentional way, it feels like I've been on the hamster wheel all day long. It's exhausting. And it feels like the day is pulling me along rather than me being in the driver's seat of my day. So self-care starts with my mornings. If there's one thing I will do, it'll be morning time. And it doesn't always have to be like a very deep meditation. It might just be sitting, reflecting, having a cup of coffee, looking out at the trees, being present with what I'm looking at, what I'm taking in, what I'm experiencing. So that's probably number one. I would say number two is making time to get outside away from city life and humans and cars and be surrounded by the trees.
You like a good tree. How do you take your coffee?
Black.
Oh, same. I do black mm-hmm. ice year. I do black ice year round. And people think I'm crazy in the winter, but it's like, do you drink hot water? It's like, it's soothing. You know what I'm saying?
Such a thing with the coffee. Like it has to be hot and perfect temperature, except if it's 100 degrees in Texas in the summer, then I'll do iced.
Right. Why is room temperature coffee so disgusting? You know what I mean?
So bad.
It's ridiculous. We're definitely going to finish up a little bit. I wanted to say that I'm very happy for you in your practice and being a therapist and doing what you're doing. It's not easy, but you're doing such a great thing, and I'm very proud of you, and hopefully you're proud of yourself as well.
Well, thank you. Very kind words. I am. And same to you, you know, being able to have all this space for people and to inspire people with different modalities and just sharing stories and being heard and reminding people that they can be vulnerable and honest. And, you know, self-growth and work and development isn't easy. But I think having spaces like this that explore different avenues is super important. So thank you.
No problem. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I have a great list of guests and you're added to that. So you should feel honored. All right. What are some words of wisdom you would give to somebody that's down and out? I know that's kind of putting you on the spot, but like, what would you say to somebody to be like, you know what? It's not that bad. Like, what would you say?
I would say, remember a time when you felt peaceful and content. Remember a time when you weren't in this space. Because for most people, it is a matter of just remembering that things weren't this way always. And that means that they have the power to shift again. I think people have a tendency to this kind of end all be all, like I'm in this space and it's never going to end. And you can just like go down the rabbit hole of becoming absorbed with it. And so a lot of times in a practice and session, it is, you know, guiding people through a meditation experience where they're remembering a memory or an imagery of a time when they were peaceful or content, when they were the opposite of what they're experiencing, when they did make a wise decision. And sometimes it doesn't happen right away, but it does always happen at some point. And when people can remember that feeling, that visceral experience of what it felt like to not be heavy and down and out, to remember a time in their lives when they did feel light and joy, even if it's when they were a child years ago, that little spark and seed is all you really need to be able to then let it grow and grow and shift your state of being because you know you've done it before.
I do that a lot. I think about like old times and like peaceful times. So like that, that's my first step. So that's really good. We're on the same page like that. I have a lot going on in my life with my personal life and work and stuff. So like, I know what I need to incorporate. Like, so this interview has been really inspiring actually for me. I do appreciate that. So I like to ask people this. So what is your personal theme song? Like if you came out to like a professional wrestling ring or your yoga studio, or like what would be playing when you came out? Like you came out, like people waiting for you to do yoga and you come out, what's playing?
Well, when I thought of this song, I was kind of had the wrestling ring thing in mind. So yeah. I'm going to go with that. I'm from Texas, grew up in rural Texas, love Shania Twain. So it would be Shania Twain, Let's Go Girls.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that. Very, very positive for the ladies.
Yeah. And it's just fun and uplifting. And who doesn't want to like dance a little bit? And, right. You know, like we were saying, life's not meant to be taken so seriously. So.
Right. And Shania Twain is up there in elite levels. So I agree with
100%.
You. Let's end with this. What are three things you're grateful for today?
My capacity to take a full breath. My Bernedoodle puppy dog. He's my ride or die.
What kind of dog is it?
Bernedoodle.
Bernedoodle? What's the name?
His name is Pasquale.
Love it. Sorry to stop you. Anytime someone thanks their dog or grateful for their dog, I have to stop them in their tracks and figure out what type of dog it is.
For sure. Just imagine like a big old teddy bear. It kind of looks like a panda. That's him.
Okay. I think I've seen those before.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, my Nespresso machine. You know, it's been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
My first espresso. Time having one, and I'm really grateful for it.
It's like Popeye's spinach espresso. I'm for it. I missed this. Where can people find you on the internet? How can they contact you? Where give us it all.
For sure. So I have a free meditation download that you can experience the five layers that I mentioned. And that is at amyhuffman.com/transformstressandanxiety. Additionally, my website, Amy Huffman, and Instagram, Amy C. Huffman. People can connect with me there too.
You got to add the C. Did someone steal your name for an Instagram handle?
Yeah, they did. So how do you get my middle initial?
Everybody out there, go harass that account. Tell them to give it up. Tell them, and Aimee has a cool spelling name. It's A-I-M-E-E. So it's very cool. I like that. And when it's a different, I wish my name was Tim with like five M's. It would be a lot cooler.
Or like five eyes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Tim. Aimee Huffman, this has been really fun, very informative. And I really appreciate you coming on. And I hope you have a great weekend, month, year, all of it.
Likewise, so grateful for you. Thanks for having me, Tim.
Thank you. That's another episode of 2010 Minutes. Let's break the stigma by cracking a smile. I will see you guys soon. Podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. If you are feeling suicidal, please dial 911.